Come on aboard, I promise you. There's lots of room for you on the bandwagon.
Hey there, welcome into another episode of the Bandwagon Sports Podcast. I am Brian Moline.
I'm Lisa Braltz.
I'm John Steinbacher, candidate for the University of Illinois women's or men's basketball position.
Yes, indeed. You got to dress the part, though, John. You're a little underdressed for that today.
I was dressed to part the other night.
You were, for our wonderful TV pledge drive,
yes,
which I was privileged to work with you. And we won't talk about how that necessarily went, but it was fun.
It's delightful, especially being in charge of fundraising for it. It was just a wonderful experience.
Yes, delightful. But enough shop talk. We'll get back to some sports talk here. We've got a great episode for you today. We'll hear from John Gassaway, who covers college basketball for ESPN. He's a University of Illinois graduate, and he's really into advanced statistics for college basketball. We'll pick his brain a little bit, not only about this year's NCAA tournament bracket, but also the University of Illinois and where things have gone wrong for the basketball program here with the last few years, and also who he wants to see as the next head coach of the University of Illinois. That'll conversation coming up here in just a moment. We'll also take a little field trip with Lisa. She went to see the Minnesota United Atlanta United FC match up in Minneapolis over the weekend. We'll check in with her. Evidently, it was cold.
It was cold, and it snowed. So it wasn't just one thing, it was both.
Yeah, so we'll check in on that here in just a bit as well. But we'll start off with kind of some news of the day here. And just, we're recording at about 2:30 this afternoon on Tuesday. And just before 2 o'clock, we got the news that Matt Beaulant had been relieved of his job as University of Illinois women's basketball coach. That comes just a few days after John Gross relieved of his duties as men's basketball coach. And John, a little deja vu going on here.
Yeah, we were just talking that 5 years ago we were basically in the same position with both programs not looking so hot. It's time to make a change. Then AD Mike Thomas made two hires. At the time, I think, especially the Beaulant hire was considered a home run. I mean, he was coming in here as a rising superstar. John Gross, I think, was probably pretty far down a lot of people's lists. But I think people were ready and willing to give him a chance. And after his first year, people were very, very excited about it. But let's just say has not worked out. Mike Thomas is not leaving too much of a stamp on the University of Illinois, except for maybe the State Farm Center / Assembly Hall renovation. That's about it, because I think most of the other coaches were here before, hired by Gunter.
Yeah, I think that's right. Just thinking back on it, I think even Kevin Hambley, who was he was here before. He was head coach before as the volleyball program. I'm thinking back. Maybe Tyra Perry, the softball coach, was a Mike Thomas hire. She had a good first year at the helm for the Illinois softball program. But otherwise, they're either holdovers from the Ron Gunther era or they're going to be new hires here in the next week or so. So busy times here for Josh Whitman, the Illini athletic director.
Yeah, and so I was gone when all this happened. So I just happened to be checking Twitter. And so can this count as my social media thing, too? Because
oh, sure.
I just happened to be—I don't even know where we were. What day did this happen? Was it Friday?
Saturday.
So I was probably, like, at the Whole Foods in St. Paul or something, buying groceries for my college student and her roommate. And I saw that come through, and I was like, whoa. And then there was immediately speculation about who was going to be brought in on the jet at Willard or something. I don't know. I was like trying to follow along. And one thing that strikes me about this, and I realize, like, you know, it seems like our athletic director really wants to hire quickly. This is kind of a interesting time to be trying to hire people because a lot of the desirable coaches are still playing. And I know that they might, you know, angle for some guys who are coaching in the pros, but I don't know how likely that is. And so, but it is really striking to me that how quickly they want to get this done. Like the search is open immediately. We want to make progress in a week or whatever. That just seems kind of,
well,
I mean, we're the U of I. Nothing moves that fast. I mean, come on.
Well, If you're the in the athletic department, you can pull a few strings. I mean, there are some. I do think the primary reason to move fast is, as you saw last year with Lovie Smith, every day, especially for recruiting, hurts you. And University of Illinois, both men's and women's actually have really good recruiting classes mm-hmm. coming in. Mm. And I think the goal would be to hire a coach soon so that you would want to be sort of a home run and try and convince a lot of those kids to stay committed.
Here's the problem, though. A lot of your candidate pool is still coaching sure. right now in the NCAA tournament. So I think what you could have is a situation where you come to an agreement
oh, yeah.
with a coach, but it's not announced
right.
until their team is out of the tournament, which... You know, it's good and bad. You're getting a good coach who's made a deep run in the tournament, but on the bad side, you're having to wait and wait and wait,
right.
and you probably can't really tell the recruits anything about what's going on. Otherwise,
well, you
what's
can
going
say,
to get out?
Well, I'm sorry. I know you wanted. To, I'm not. Go ahead.
Whenever. No, I mean, yeah. I was thinking of saying was how. Whitman said, like, people have reached out already. Like, it sounds like they already have a pretty decent pull. What does that mean? Is it just him sort of nattering on for the press?
I think he's got to say that. I lost my train of thought. But I think with Whitman so far, based on football, which was a huge splash, and volleyball, if he tells the recruits, you know, just trust me, hang in for a few weeks, I think he's already built up enough. Well, let's see what happens. Because I think... You know, realistically, probably the two top recruits are the ones who are most likely to leave for men's basketball, which would be Jeremiah Tillman and Trent Frazier. And, you know, in a couple weeks, there'll still be a lot of candidates out there who want them there.
The other thing in Illinois' favor here is that both Tillman and Frazier have both signed letters of intent
right.
to come to the University of Illinois. And in most cases, what will happen is once a new coach is hired— most schools will give those players the option to opt out of their letter of intent if they want to. But that gives the university some time to say, hey,
right.
we hired this coach. Give him a chance to talk to you and impress you, et cetera.
Well, and I read somewhere, too, that maybe one of the top recruits said, we've already got a text group going together, all of us, like, talking and communicating together, which is kind of, you know, in the last 10 years, that's sort of a new thing where they can talk with each other. So I thought that was interesting, too. I mean, and I think I've never met Josh Whitman, but he strikes me as kind of intense, cool guy that he got Lovie Smith here. I mean, you know, he can get it done. So I'm curious, though, we talked a little bit about the concept of the coaching carousel, and we can include the women's program for this, too. So what do you guys have any speculation about who might get hired and how the dominoes are going to fall? And you don't even have to talk specifically about U of I coaches if you want, because we know some other coaches are kind of on hot seats. Tom Crean from Indiana is one that I can think of offhand. So curious. And what would bring somebody here?
Well, I think
besides a lot of money.
Well, that's
the number one thing.
That's high on the list. I think a few things are appealing about the Illinois job. One, you have to go back a little ways, but there is a really good tradition here at Illinois. Really, there was about a 25-year period where I think they only missed the NCAA tournament four times in that stretch. And two of those were years where there was NCAA probation there in the early 90s after the whole Deion Thomas-Bruce Pearl fiasco. So there is a tradition here that's really kind of fallen off the last decade or so. The other part is that you are within very close distance of one of the best high school basketball cities in the country in Chicago. There's some good that goes with that. There is some downside that goes with that. But if we're a college basketball coach, you want to recruit the best players. You're close to a city that has a lot of the best players.
And you
do have a renovated arena, which also is a help. I think, you know, State Farm Center may not be perfect in its renovated form, but it's a lot better than what it was 5 years ago.
I would say interesting, the coaching carousel, one of the interesting things about the Indiana job speculation that they do that Tom Crean is on the hot seat. However, he has a buyout of $4 million until July 1st, mm-hmm. and then it becomes $1 million. Mm-hmm. So I think that makes it pretty interesting. That almost makes it so that maybe they'll sit on it, you know, it's Indiana. When it comes to the coaching position, I'm sure money is not a huge object, but $3 million is a lot. And Tom Crean still has some pretty good players over there. You might want to give him one more year.
The other thing about Crean you wonder is, would he make that decision maybe to move on himself?
Right.
Which is a possibility. You know, if he were to do that, there certainly are some interesting jobs that are already open. Missouri is one. Mm-hmm. North Carolina State is one. Mm-hmm. There will be others, I'm sure, that do come open.
But I would say that North Carolina State is not necessarily a better job than Illinois. Mm-hmm. I think Indiana clearly is.
Yeah.
I can't think of any other ones that will obviously be open that would be superior jobs.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think Indiana is the one that you want to hire before anything happens there.
Mm-hmm. So here's my question.
Yeah.
Any idle speculation, you know?
Can go to the internet. I mean,
I know the internet has lots of speculation, but I'm curious to know, like, in your heart of hearts, we don't have to talk about your fantasy picks necessarily, but you know, because I saw a list, I can't remember where anymore, of, you know, 5 or 10 potential names. And there were a couple surprises there for me, like the coach from Virginia.
Tony Bennett. Yeah.
Like, he's a Wisconsin guy.
Yeah, he's originally from Wisconsin. His dad was the coach there. Tony played at Wisconsin.
I guess I did know that.
I think he coveted that job, and now that – I forget what it was.
Greg Gard.
Now that Greg Gard is actually doing a very good job, it's probably not going to come on the market for a while. So that's probably – the speculation is – he was holding out for that job, and now that it looks like it might not, Greg Gard might have a hold on it, maybe he'll come to Illinois because it's a Midwest. It's the same kind of thing. I think he'd be a good coach. He's a Wisconsin coach. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, he coaches that same system.
Yeah, if you want an exciting basketball game.
Yeah, he does not get up down the court. They play a very slow pace.
They win a lot of games,
and you know they're the type of team that our next guest, John Gassaway, really likes in terms of their efficiency. Although their offensive efficiency has slipped a little bit this year, but typically they don't score a lot of points, but they take care of the basketball. They don't turn it over. They play good, solid defense. They are consistently successful. They have not been the type of team that has been elite at Virginia. Maybe one year where I think they made the Elite Eight and Michigan State beat them. But they've been very good consistently. The name I'm interested to see, and I think if there's a year where he's going to move, it might be this year, is Greg Marshall at Wichita State. They went 30-4 this year, won 30 games, won the Missouri Valley, I think tied for the regular season championship with Illinois State, and then won the tournament. They got a number 10 seed. And The reason for that is that in their non-conference schedule, they didn't play – I think they played maybe 3 or 4 NCAA tournament teams, and I think they lost to each one of them during the non-conference season. And that really hurt them when it came to their seed for the NCAA tournament. But most people think that they are much better than their seed, and you wonder if Marshall might be getting frustrated with kind of the ceiling of things in the Missouri Valley and might want to go to a bigger school.
Mm-hmm. I will say I got burned so bad last year or last time around, and I do think Whitman will do a better job than Thomas, but, like, you know, I was like, Shaka Smart is coming here, and everyone was super excited, and then Shaka Smart didn't come in. And then it was like, Brad Stevens is coming here, and everyone was so excited, and then Brad Stevens didn't come, and then you end up with John Gross, which is fine. But, like, it's kind of like, you know, we've talked about with the Cubs, and now I guess that's over, but it's hard to get excited about some of these hot names because I just don't want to be rejected again.
Yeah. Any speculation about what the Blount news, as we mentioned, just happened. So it's no one has really had any
I'm really
chances
surprised,
to do some research.
Because I would have thought he would have gotten fired last year. They were pretty bad this year, but the freshman class has been excellent, and the incoming class is supposedly even better. So I was really surprised about that. I would have thought last year was the year to fire him after everything that happened. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me, if you want an indication of how good Illinois maybe could have been this year, you've got Shatrice White, who transferred and is playing at Florida State. Yeah. I think it's either 2 or 3 players that transferred to DePaul. They're a top 10 team in the country. If all those players were on this year's Illinois team with that talented freshman class, it'd be a whole lot different story. But, you know, I think most people know what happened off the court here at Illinois, which caused the first group of that those players to transfer up to DePaul, and then Shatrice White followed suit afterward and went to Florida State the next year. So, yeah, what could have been for Matt Bowen at Illinois?
I mean, I think one thing that, that's been pretty clear through all this is Whitman means it when he says we will win, because you don't win, you're out.
Yeah, I think that's about right. So, yeah, the coaching carousel continues to turn here at the University of Illinois. Stay with us. Coming up next, we'll hear from John Gassaway of ESPN. We'll get his thoughts on the coaching carousel here at the University of Illinois. We'll also talk to him about this year's NCAA March Madness bracket. So stay tuned. That's coming up here on The Bandwagon. NCAA March Madness is upon us, and we thought we'd bring in a bit of an expert to talk about that with us this week. We bring in John Gassaway. He's a University of Illinois graduate, and he writes for ESPN.com. We even get to see your pretty face on ESPN television once in a while, right, John Gassaway?
That's right. Maybe even now if I weren't snowed in, but perhaps that will happen in the coming days. That's right.
All right. Very good. John joins us via Skype today. Thanks for your time here today. And, you know, John, one of the things that you write about for ESPN, you kind of write about basketball from an analytical perspective, from a statistical standpoint. I guess my first question for you is just kind of how you got started in kind of that line of basketball writing.
Well, way back when, I was a blogger, and that was happening for about 3 years. I did that on the side in addition to a real job. And then I started a website called Basketball Prospectus with a guy named Ken Pomeroy, and he and I worked for another guy named Nate Silver. I lost track of those two guys. I'm not sure what happened to them, but I hope they're doing okay. And we did that for a few years, and then ESPN kind of descended on that site from above and hired the people who were working at it then. And here we are talking about the NCAA tournament in 2017.
Yeah, you know, and some of the things that you know that you and Ken really, you know, were some of the first to write about was, I guess, what you'd call advanced statistics in basketball. Some of that has to do with points per possession, a lot of other efficiency statistics. You know, you guys were the first ones to really write about that a lot online, but certainly I think a lot of those statistics, they go back quite a ways, don't they?
We were absolutely standing on the shoulders of giants who had been there decades before us, starting with and especially former North Carolina coach, the late Dean Smith. He was doing this stuff for basketball when Bill James was still in middle school, just an incredible mind. And he practiced what he preached with his team. And everything that has happened since then has been just building on what Dean Smith did. It was just laying there, and I couldn't believe that nobody was using it. So I kind of picked it up and ran with it, and one thing led to another, and here we are.
So Lisa here, my question is, you're a University of Illinois graduate, College of Media?
No, well, kind of.
Okay.
I got several degrees there as I kept fishing around for something that would work and get me employed. I was liberal arts and sciences to start with, but then I did indeed get a master's in advertising. So I've done some time in Greg Hall, absolutely.
Okay, so my question is, for you to do what you do, how much of it is actual math? Like, are you doing a lot of math yourself?
Well, it's funny that you should say that, because to get that master's in advertising, I believe at the U of I, that was a master's of science, an MS. Mm-hmm. And they came at this English major who was terrified at the time and said, to get an MS, you need to take stats. And I was like, well, if I must, I must. And I found that I liked it. I found that it all was very intuitive and easy. And everything that I do on that side of, you know, I write words too, but to do the numbers behind the words, it all comes from a TA whose name I really wish I could remember, who walked me through it in the basement of Greg Hall on many sleepy mornings. So hats off to that person.
Well, yeah, just looking at your current, your website at johngassaway.com, just reading the analysis, I'm kind of like, if you could see me, my head would be exploding. I'd be making that gesture. So, and as a history major who did not do so well in her only stats class, you have my mad respect.
Well, you never know. I mean, I surprised me. You could too. You just have to be open to those requirements that the U of I inflicts on us. Could happen.
John, here, you know, at University of Illinois campus, of course, we're enduring another March with no NCAA tournament appearance for four in a row. And I know, as a U of I grad and a big basketball fan, that's something that that hurts you as an alum as well. As you kind of look back at the tenure of John Gross here as Illini basketball coach, I'm wondering if, from a statistical standpoint, you can point to one or two things that his teams maybe did that really kind of held them back a little bit, maybe from getting to where they wanted to go.
The frustrating thing, as an Illinois fan, and I'm if you know, in line with the previous comment, if you could see me now, I'm taking off of my ESPN hat and I'm putting on my block eye hat here. The frustrating thing for me as an Illinois fan was that the biggest problem over the past 4 years or so kept shifting. And so, no, it's not a thing where I can just say the offense was always terrible because, frankly, of late, the defense came to be a problem. One thing that did drive me recurrently crazy, and this is a longstanding thing, a style thing with Illinois, is they have tended to like long 2-point jumpers inside the arc. And for a while now, in the NBA and in the college game as well, teams have more and more and more been staying away from that. And just the other day, I can't remember now if it was the Big Ten tournament or the disastrous last game at Rutgers, but there was an Illinois fast break. And I can't remember who the player was. I wouldn't name him if I did, but they were spotting up in transition 17 feet away on the wing. I was just yelling at the screen saying, why are you standing there? You know, move 2 feet further back. You'll get a 3-pointer. Yeah. So these are the kinds of things I gnash my teeth about and think of as an Illinois fan. But in line with the question about how I got here, when I started writing, when I started blogging, it was in 2004, 2005. Mm. And, My 12 readers that I had at the time were subjected to a kind of giddy, euphoric overwriting that nobody has seen from me since. I long for the world to be able to see that from me again. Someday it will happen.
This is I'm also John, and I also, I guess I probably must have ran into you because I graduated from U of I with an English degree, probably right around the same time as you. First question, boy, that 2004-2005 team was probably pretty efficient, I have to imagine.
Oh, absolutely. They were up there around, I think, maybe 1.2 points per possession. I don't have that in front of me. I'd have to dig through the archives. But the thing was, we were just getting started with looking at the game in this way. And then once we had that in our hands, it was reaffirming what our delighted eyes were telling us that Dee Brown and Darren Williams were doing. They were never turning the ball over. They were always making their threes. And it was just a great, great way to play. A highly efficient team. And then, sadly, with my newfound knowledge, I was able to chart the decline after that. And it was not a happy thing, but wow, what a mountaintop to start from.
And this will go to the sort of hint at the next part of my question, but not just Illinois basketball, but basketball overall. How would you respond? Brian and I are big baseball fans, and one of the most common complaints about advanced analysis and baseball is, oh, you can't enjoy the game anymore. It's no fun, blah, 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 blah. How has the advanced analytics of basketball affected your fandom? Do you find that it actually, you were discussing earlier how frustrating it is for you to be an Illinois fan and see things like that. And of course, the rest of us Illinois fans feel the same way, but we can't quite articulate it as well as you can. But how has it impacted your fandom overall of basketball?
I never have really understood. I can't speak for baseball analytic types, but in basketball, I have never really understood the stereotype of the person who is hunched over a laptop with an Excel spreadsheet open while the NCAA tournament is on, saying, I can't be bothered. I can't. Not only do I not know that person, I can't imagine that person. In fact, paradoxically, that's how I got into this line of work in the first place, was because I was always sneaking away from my actual job this coming Thursday to, you know, I have to run something over to this client, you know, and I would go watch the NCAA tournament this Thursday to the afternoon games. I mean, watching is everything. And the NCAA tournament is still, I believe, the best spectating event in sports, college or pro, worldwide, period, that I've run into.
I was just going to say, those first 4 days are like the best 4 days of the entire year, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Just continuous basketball.
It's just all arriving faster than you can keep track of it. The stakes are equally high in every game you see. Every losing team is going home, and it's crushing to all of them. I just cannot think of a parallel. It's an unparalleled and wonderful viewing experience, and I love the NCAA tournament. My trafficking in numbers furthers my enjoyment of what I see, and I see hours and hours and hours of it more than just about anybody I know.
Sure, and John, I we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you a little bit about this year's brackets. As we talk here on Tuesday, of course, the first four games have not yet taken place, but absent those games, we can take a look here at the 64 team bracket. From your standpoint, as someone who looks at those, you know, efficiency numbers, as you see the teams and the seedings and everything, are there some teams that you think are being kind of undervalued, by the committee and their seeding? Who are some teams that maybe could make a run that that might not be expected?
Well, when the brackets came out on Sunday night, there was an immediate hue and cry to the effect that Wichita State had been egregiously underseeded. And in fact, the one-liner was that the Shockers were made a 10 seed when actually they might be the 10th best team in the country. So I will agree with that and salute it smartly and go on to some less obvious answers to your question, namely SMU might not be a team that listeners have had occasion to watch a lot playing in the American Conference. They are excellent. They are seeded 6th. That's probably a bit low if they had the favorable position of a major conference and they had played as well as they had, they'd probably be more like a 4 or even a 3. They've got a legitimate star who was a Duke transfer named Shemi Ojale. And then St. Mary's had the misfortune of having Gonzaga blow up huge in their conference, and everybody was all about Gonzaga. I am too. I've got the Zags going to the Final Four. But let's not look past St. Mary's. They were just as good as everybody said they would be in the preseason when they were put in the top 25. And in Jock Landale, they've probably got the West Coast Player of the Year, a guy who's seriously undervalued just because his team plays at a slow pace. So he's got artificially lowered per game stats, but a major, major college basketball star in Jock Landale.
So Lisa here again. I have a question about when you're putting together your bracket, and this could maybe go for your colleagues too. I sort of imagine like a smoke-filled room where everybody's like sitting together and putting them together. But once you lock it in, do you ever have like bracket creator's remorse?
Oh, absolutely. And the purists that we are, we insist that you only have one bracket. You know, it's like Robert De Niro says in The Deer Hunter, one shot. You know, you can only have one bracket. And these people who have multiple brackets, we just cannot understand. So you've only got one bracket, and you're sitting there in 2016 and you say, yep, you know, Michigan State, they're going to the Final Four. And you watch that, you watch that round of 64 game and you think, oh, man, what have I done? Bracket remorse is one of the most beautiful agonies of this weird ritual that we call March Madness, and it's inevitable. It does happen even to the quote-unquote experts.
So obviously, knowing that in any game, anything can happen, over time, have you been able to back up the fact that, some of these more advanced numbers, efficiencies, back up who wins the tournament? Or is it just, since it's basically one game at a time and random, more random, do you have to kind of throw some of that stuff out of the window? And to follow up, I'll say, Is there anything about this year's Gonzaga team other than, you know, the fact that they haven't lost as much that makes you think this is the year as opposed to all the other years?
Good question. So I'll take the second part first. I think that Gonzaga labors a little unfairly under a presumption of skepticism because of 2013, when they were a number one seed and they lost in the round of 32 to a Wichita State team that buried 14 3-point shots. Nobody remembers 2 years ago, the Zags made the Elite Eight and they lost to a team that everybody lost to because it was Duke and they won the national championship. Nobody says Tom Izzo, man, he can't get past the round of 64 just because he lost last year. So I do like Gonzaga. They are dominant inside of the arc on both offense and defense. I think that's a good platform from which to launch your Final Four run. And also, I think they've got a pretty favorable bracket just as it happens. I might not be quite so bullish if they were in a different region. And then as far as, you know, knowing with advanced numbers when these crazy things will happen, sometimes yes, sometimes no. Middle Tennessee State last year was better than people realized, but they certainly weren't up there on the same bleachers as Michigan State. I like to say that I will win your bracket pool, I guarantee, if our bracket pool is 20 tournaments long, you know, then it will fall in my favor eventually. But these, you know, epic upsets, if people can think back to 2012, I know it's hard to believe, but Missouri used to be really good and they lost to a MEAC team, a 15 seed named Norfolk State. I mean, nobody can see them coming. And when they happen, and I'm usually watching these things with my colleagues in Bristol, Connecticut, none of us is saying, oh, you know, this is going to destroy my bracket. I mean, there is just sheer spectating joy. And unless, of course, you know, you are the Missouri graduate or you are the Michigan State graduate, everybody almost literally in the country is pulling for that Norfolk State and pulling for that Middle Tennessee. It's just a wonderful event that we have in March, and I do love it.
And John, we talked about, you know, teams maybe that were underseeded that could make some noise. How about the opposite? Who's maybe a number one or number two seed that you see as being pretty vulnerable this time?
Vulnerable might be a strong word. There were not any great seeding controversies, I don't think, on the top two lines. Louisville didn't look all that great the last five times they played away from home late in the season. They won one of those five games in overtime. The other four games they lost. But, you know, that's obviously a dangerous two seed. And then everywhere else you look on the top eight lines, I've got no problem. So I'm not going to brand any of those teams as doomed necessarily. I do think if you drop down a line and you look at a team like Oregon as a three seed, they just lost Chris Boucher, who was a rare combination a shot blocker, an excellent three-point shooter, and as talented as Oregon is, that might be a tough loss for them to overcome. And it happened just at the 11th hour as well, so kind of a big question mark for the Ducks.
Sure, and a team that seems to be getting a lot of love for the Final Four is UCLA. Looking at some of their numbers, John, they're certainly a great offensive team, one of, if not the best offensive team in the country. Are they good enough defensively to make a run?
I think that relative to their offense, they are. UCLA has forced the evaluative question in my conscience this season, and I've come down on it and decided I'm agnostic on the question of how you outscore your opponents as long as you outscore them by a lot. And UCLA, on both offense for points scored and defense for points allowed, their numbers are unusually high, and people look at that number for points allowed and they scream and run. But, you know, relative to their number for points scored, it's a lot lower. So I can see why people would have UCLA going to the Final Four, and Lonzo Ball is my pick as the most entertaining and possibly best player to watch in the tournament. He has a rather loquacious and boisterous father making claims to the effect that his son is just as good now as Steph Curry. And sometimes, you know, Ball can almost have you feeling the same way. He is really something to watch.
So Lisa here, just one last question for me. I'm curious to know more about what you think in terms of statistics and their use and the constant number crunching that we're doing in every single sport. And also as the parent of two college-age kids, I'm just kind of curious what the job prognostications kind of look like for people who do stats and are interested in sports. I'm thinking, too, because I always have soccer on the brain, that's kind of my thing. As the MLS continues to expand and as the National Women's Soccer League continue to expand, and there's no shortage of statistics in soccer, is that something that you can see branching out and getting bigger in all sports, like more people parsing these numbers and finding new ways to crunch them to provide information?
Well, I think that what has happened is that there is now a field where when I started writing about basketball, there kind of was not. And as you say, rightly, that field cuts across all sports. So now it's kind of gone through a sequence where I was writing about college basketball and people would email me and they would say, hey, you know, love your blog. How can I be a blogger? And then a year later, those same people were saying, hey, you know, I'm working for the Celtics. Can you give me some, can you give me some information on what you're seeing? I was like, why?
Wow.
I'd like to work for the Celtics and I'm getting a fan letter from you. I mean, mm-hmm. Come on, help me out here. So, every pro team has analytics staff. A lot of college teams do. I've seen some good work done just in terms of listing who those people are. All of these types of people from the various sports do get together at an annual event in Boston called the Sloan Conference that is ridiculously poorly timed in March and makes it hard for me to go. But there is a profession where 10 and definitely 15 years ago, there was none. So if there are college-aged children or listeners out there who are thinking of this as a career, do it, because there are such opportunities now where once there were not.
John, last question before we let you go. Back to Illinois for just a second. Anyone in particular you'd really like to see as the next head coach for the Fighting Illini?
You know, I was asked that at ESPN yesterday. They said, who do you want to see? And then they paused and they said, realistically. And I quickly corrected them and said, no, I don't have to be realistic. I'm a fan. I want Brad Stevens and I want him now. So I'm sticking to that. I think that if somebody can just put me on the phone, I can convince him. So it's Brad Stevens or bust. That's who I want to see.
Too bad you weren't Mike Thomas a few years ago.
Absolutely.
John Gassaway with ESPN joining us to talk hoops, talking Illini, and talking March Madness. John, thanks a lot for the time. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the Madness this year.
Will do. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, John.
Bye.
Thanks again to John Gassaway for spending about 20 good minutes with us talking NCAA March Madness. Now it's time to shift gears a little bit. Our talented co-host Lisa Braltz was up in Minnesota, not mm-hmm. only to see mm-hmm. the lovely Lily, but also to take in some soccer.
Yeah, and John gave us 20 good minutes. I got about five. So five good ones, probably an hour's not so good. So actually, the whole story behind this is pretty funny because for a while, we were planning this trip to go visit my daughter at school. She's at a very tiny liberal arts college called McAllister College in St. Paul, incidentally, where I went to school, but that's not why she went there, but that's a whole other story. Anyway, tiny little school, but as it turns out, and I can't say that this did not factor into her decision because she's a first-year student, Minnesota United went MLS. They finally got accepted into the MLS, and part of the deal is that they have to build a really awesome stadium that's soccer-dedicated. So they're doing that, and it just so happens that ground is being broken on a site about three-quarters of a mile north of her campus.
Sweet.
So, yeah, it's pretty exciting. However, they're not playing there yet, obviously, and I'll talk in a second about where they are. But anyway, so we're going up to see Lily, and Jim's like, yeah, I got us tickets for the game. Cool. I'm like, great. And I didn't realize until about 4 days before we left that it was the home opener. It was the MLS franchise, like, home opener. It was going to be a huge deal, and many thousands of people were going to be there. And then I looked at the weather forecast, and I was like, oh, typical. It's the state high school hockey tournament this weekend, and they're forecasting 4 inches of snow for soccer game. So, yeah, I'm pretty traditionally there's a blizzard. This was not a blizzard. But anyway, so the game was held at TCF Stadium, which is where the Minnesota Gophers play football.
Yeah.
When I lived there, that venue did not exist. The Gophers were playing in the Metrodome. I believe at that time. I think they played all their games there, so it was indoor football. So it's a really nice stadium. It's actually one of the few stadiums in this country that I've been in that my brother has not been in. My brother goes to all of these stadiums, so that was pretty cool. I can kind of lord that over him. But and the crowd was great. There were like over 35,000 people there, and our seats were really good because Jim, you know, was on the case early. I did not know what was going on, but he was on the case. Jim's my husband. And it was great. It was a great experience. We brought every warm thing that we had, I think, knowing that it was going to be cold. So not just snowing. It wasn't like 28 degrees and snowing. It was like feels like 10 and snowing. But I have found if you drink enough beer and jump up and down a lot and wear snow pants and a hat, you're in
snow
good
pants.
Shape.
There you go.
Yeah, I was wearing snow pants. I was probably the warmest person in our group because I got to wear Jim's snow pants. Anyway, so it was really fun. The experience was fun. I'll post some pictures on the website when we post the show notes. The team looked terrible. The team, our team, mm-hmm. Ours meaning Minnesota's team, just looked terrible. We are total, you know, we are in the tank for Minnesota big time. I'm from there. My daughter's in school up there. Well, I'm sure we'll go to several more games. We've been supporters since they were in the NASL like the last 3 or 4 years. But they were bad. They've spent a lot of money on a stadium, haven't spent a lot of money on players. So they brought up some of the guys from the NASL team. And actually, one of them, Christian Ramirez, scored the very first MLS goal for Minnesota United when they played Portland for their actual, just like their season opener. They played in Portland and were beat 5-1. They lost 6-1 this game that we saw. But as I was telling Brian off mic earlier, Minnesota United was competitive through the first half. And in fact, the last 10 minutes of the match, they had a ball go off the crossbar. There was a lot of activity. Keep in mind, the snow is falling furiously. You can't see the lines. Everybody's going crazy. But at the end, it was 3-1 at half. They just couldn't get anything to go in. And my daughter was beside herself at the play of the defense. And it was awful. And all the goal scoring was happening at the opposite end of the field for us, and you could still see how terrible it was. So they've definitely got some things to work on. The coach, Adrian Heath, coached Orlando when they were an expansion team, and put him in pretty good position. I'm not real sure what he's going to do with this ragtag bunch of guys. One of the guys had just joined the team 3 days sooner. They had only practiced twice together. The goalkeeper from Sweden got hurt, and everybody thought he broke his leg, but he's only going to be out for 1 to 3 weeks. And the fandom is sort of like unsettled by, well, losing by so many goals. But
yeah.
But anyway, and also the game was on ESPN2. And actually, we watched the replay last night. The snow looked 50 times more epic on television than it was in person. I mean, it was cool in person, but watching it on TV, I was like, man, that is awesome.
I wish I was there.
Yeah, well, you can watch the replay. It was pretty great. Yeah. But Taylor Twellman was the announcer for ESPN2 and some other guy named Adrian. I can't remember his name. But they were very disparaging in their remarks about Minnesota, which I thought was kind of sad because Taylor Twellman has a family history in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. I think his father was drafted for the Minnesota Kicks like 40 years ago or something. So, you know, because Minnesota's had soccer teams here and there for, you know, several decades. But actually when Minnesota United played Portland for their season opener, Alexi Lalas was one of the commentators, and he was just shredding them. And I was like, hey, come on. They're new. But they may go down in history as being the worst new expansion team in the history of the MLS.
Sounds like maybe some similarities to the 1976 Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who were coached by USC, former USC head coach John McKay. Thing I remember reading and hearing most about that team. I mean, they were awful. They went 0-14. He was asked after one game late in the season, what do you think about your team's execution? I mean, how did they perform? And McKay's quip was simply, I'm in favor of it.
Well, I think it's going to be rough. The people, you know, like you guys, we were talking, people want to win. They want to win matches. They want to see wins. They're not going to get 35,000 people per game, especially at seats that are whatever, 35, 40 bucks a pop or whatever. But I will say this, the culture and the vibe and the mood at soccer matches is super fun. And the fan sections in particular for Minnesota are really like well-developed, robust, rabid, crazy. There was a guy, he made the front page of both Twin City newspapers, who was shirtless much of the match. And like one of the pictures, it's hilarious. And I actually have a link to a Minnesota public radio. They took several photos of the match. But I have to shout out to the Dark Clouds and also to the True North Elite. Those are the two fan, like sort of fan supporter groups. An old friend of mine from Minneapolis, St. Paul, Bruce McGuire, was one of the co-founders of Dark Clouds. And he's around the games a lot and has had a lot to do with helping bring soccer to Minnesota. So I hope people are patient, because it is, I hate watching soccer teams lose. I watch my kids' teams lose plenty of games, you know. But the atmosphere at a professional soccer game is really great, and there's all kinds of people at these matches. It's a little more affordable maybe than a professional baseball, football, stuff like that. So we'll probably try to go see them when they get closer. Like if they go, you know, when they come to Chicago, we'll probably go see them. And but it was really fun, and I highly recommend it. And go United!
All right, thanks for that report, Lisa. And with that, it's now rivalry time.
My turn.
It is Lisa's turn.
It's my turn, and I'm going to talk about the two teams in college basketball, in men's college basketball, that I hate the most, but it's called the best basketball rivalry ever, maybe even the best sports rivalry. I think I've seen it called that a couple times too, and that is Duke and North Carolina, or as I call Duke, Puke and North Carolina. We have some like unflattering names for Coach K. I think we've talked in other previous episodes about the concept of a meteor game. Like you don't favor either team. You just wish a meteor would come and take them both out. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I view Duke and North Carolina. But the thing that that amazes me about this rivalry, and I saw this, I don't know. It was right before they were going to be playing each other again, so it must have been,
I think it was just before the ACC championship game over the weekend.
Yeah, but there was more even, maybe even in February, because they were going to be playing each other again. This guy, Andrew Carter, wrote on Twitter, "Indeed, UNC and Duke have scored the same exact number of points, 7,437, and won the same number of games, 48, in the past 96 meetings." Like, you really can't. There's something about that even though I hate both teams, it's kind of like, wow.
I've always had, it's one of those, I'm with you, and you've got ESPN that, you know, hypes that rivalry so much every time it comes around.
And you have Jay Billis, who is like the analyst.
Three quarters of the analysts for ESPN are from the ACC, so we get beat over the head with that rivalry, but that doesn't make it any less good of a rivalry.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah.
And that really goes back to when Coach K really brought Duke back up in the mid-80s, and really ever since that time, there's been very few years where one of those teams hasn't been really good. At first it was Coach K against Dean Smith. Now it's Coach K against dadgummit Roy Williams.
Dadgummit. I love that guy, though. Like his swears. I'm sure he has real swears, too, but I love it when he throws that in. A couple of things I want to point out about this rivalry that have nothing to do with basketball, but the cultural impact of this rivalry is enormous. Now, I don't know how close the schools are geographically to each other, but it's not very far.
It's like 10 miles or something.
Yeah, so it's like there is no home game, really, you have your home gym, but in terms of the crowd, I think it's going to be sort of like a bragging rights game, right? It's going to be sort of split down the middle, or how do they do that?
Well, I think at Duke, especially, it's hard for other teams to get tickets to those games because Cameron Indoor Stadium does not seat that many, and so I think they sell most of those out for season tickets. You might have a few Carolina fans sprinkled in there, but it's tough. You might see a few more Duke fans able to get tickets at Carolina, although that's not an easy ticket either.
Yeah, so that's interesting, but there have been documentaries made about this rivalry. I Googled North Carolina Duke rivalry shirts. There's a lot.
Yeah.
And it's not, there's sort of the milquetoast ones, like Keep Calm and Hate Duke, you know, like the Keep Calm and Carry On.
Yeah.
And then there's some not so savory ones that I'm not really going to talk about here, but you can Google that for yourself and check it out. But it's just it's such a huge part of the culture there, even outside of basketball. Like, I think it's a topic of conversation no matter how much you care about basketball there. And that's the kind of thing that fascinates me about rivalries, too.
Absolutely.
So
the I really used to like North Carolina because of Dean Smith and Michael Jordan, but I don't so much anymore.
After old Roy took over.
After Roy took over and a certain
Big Butt Sean May.
Big Butt Sean May got all the calls in the 2005 championship.
Oh, well, that – and so, okay. So so I guess North Carolina is a little extra special on the list because of that because of that game. But really, it for me, it's still a meteor rivalry. But I have to respect the math.
Yeah.
And I have to respect –
it's a great rivalry.
The consistency over time is just kind of amazing. And it's really been embraced by the people who live there in a way that Illinois cannot seem to round up that kind of rivalry situation. A, we don't really have anybody 10 miles away that's, you know, like an equal partner. And we talked a little bit about this, like with bragging rights and stuff like that. But they, you know, you're not going to make Illinois Northwestern happen. Trying to make it happen.
Do you know offhand what the two closely located Big Ten schools are?
Well, Purdue's one of them to Illinois.
Purdue and Illinois are the two geographically closest Big Ten schools.
What is that, like an hour and
an hour and a half-ish? Yeah, 90 miles, give or take.
But that just has never taken for
me as a
rivalry.
Because it's Indiana-Purdue is a much more natural rivalry.
Right, right. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So
anyway, that's my contribution.
Well, dadgummit, that's a good rivalry, Lisa.
Well, gosh darn it, Brian, thank you.
Well, let's close out with some social media status updates here. Lisa, we already got yours, so
I'm going to provide like some of my own tweets in the show notes too, of like pictures of us at the game and everything, you guys. So
very good.
Skip me.
I'm going to go first this week, and if you're familiar at all with Illinois State, I think we might have mentioned. I don't think we did actually in this podcast, but
we mentioned Wichita State.
That's right. Yeah. We did mention them as part of that discussion. But Illinois State was one of the last teams out of the NCAA tournament, and you know they finished with a record of 27-6. They shared the regular season title in the Missouri Valley Conference, but they lost in the tournament, so they were eliminated. They are hosting an NIT game this week as well. Their head coach Dan Mueller went to Twitter. And had one of the best tweets I've seen. It's been as of right now, it's been retweeted about 3,800 times. It's been liked about 6,500 times. He created, at least you'll like this. He created a Bitmoji of himself.
Oh, excellent!
The Bitmoji is a photo of him standing with hands on hips, the hourglass ticking away, and it says, "I'm waiting." And the tweet says, ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, SEC, Pac-12, Big East, it's me again, looking for home and home next year. Please call me for a chance for quality road win, top 33 RPI. Just going on Twitter to kind of outline how tough it is for a school like Illinois State to get other schools to play them, especially to come play them in Bloomington Normal. And so you've got this catch-22 with these schools. They're told, well, you've got to schedule tougher in your non-conference, but none of the big conference schools really want to come play them, especially at their place, you know, in Bloomington Normal. Mm-hmm. So, and as I understand, just following some of the Twitter conversation yesterday, it sounds like there might be the possibility that Illinois State and Ole Miss from the SEC are going to get together for a game. So it may have worked out for Dan Mueller and Illinois State.
Well done.
It's interesting. Of course, the Illinois State, we're just talking about Illinois rivalries, and Illinois State would love to play Illinois every year, home and home, but
no,
U of I won't do that. And right now, one of them is actually better at basketball than the other, and it's not the one who thinks they are. Well, that was going to be my social media. I showed that to Lisa.
Yeah, it took me a second to figure out what was going on, but then I got it. So
I have a backup.
Oh, good. What do
and
you have?
It related to what Lisa was talking about earlier, I think. This might have been yours last year around this time.
Mm-hmm.
It's the annual Minnesota High School Hockey Tournament Hair.
Hockey Tournament Hair.
Video.
Yes.
Which just came out. So
what
we
do we
will
get?
Post that.
What is that?
What? You don't know what this is, Brian?
Oh, no.
I don't.
We must not have talked about it. Well, maybe you and I talked about it.
It's the greatest thing ever. just so I don't really know how to explain it, except for all the high school hockey players in Minnesota seem to try and have the best hockey hair. And at the state tournament, they all come out and flop their hair when they're introduced. And there's a guy who for probably 5 or 6 or 7 years always, like, picks out the video and gives commentary. It's amazing. So
the hockey hair video?
The hockey hair. The Minnesota hockey state tournament hair video. Got to be accurate, Brian.
All right. I will have to look that up and take a look. Well, I believe that is going to just about wrap things up on this edition of The Bandwagon. Lisa, take us out.
So I'm going to stumble through our end credits because I didn't print them out.
Oh!
But, you know, I've said them enough so that maybe I can get it done. You've been listening to yet another episode of The Bandwagon. Thank you so much for joining us. Big thanks to John Gassaway of ESPN for joining us today and talking about math. Thanks, John. Appreciate it. Also, many thanks to all of the folks here at WILL and Illinois Public Media who helped make this podcast possible, especially Scott Cameron. He's our, what do we call him now?
Executive editor.
He's our executive editor, and he thinks that this is okay. So he lets us keep doing it, which is awesome. Thanks, Scott. And also folks like Taylor Judd, Mike Bowman, Jim Kelly, etc. Thank you so much. Gosh, you can find us online at will.illinois.edu/bandwagon. That's where we post our episode. That's where we post our photos. That's where... Why are you air guitaring?
He's saying R.E.M. Brian Moline plays air guitar.
Brian Moline plays air guitar and R.E.M. provides our theme music. Thank you. Anyway, anyway, will.illinois.edu/bandwagon. That's our home on the internet. You can find us there. We are at Twitter at Bandwagon Podcast.
No vowels.
No vowels. And from there, you can navigate to all of our individual Twitter accounts. But please follow us. We love that. If you are into the podcast thing, listening on demand, you can do that. You can find us wherever you look for podcasts. We would love it if you rated us in iTunes. It helps people find us there. What else? What am I missing?
I don't think anything. I think that's great.
I think we're going to be back here in a couple of weeks. You aren't going to be around for show planning, so you're just going to have to say.
Neither is Moline.
What?
Yeah. No.
Oh, my God. Well,
just tell
join us
what you come up with.
Join us in a couple weeks, and we'll, you know, maybe our program, our podcast will be exactly like these credits have been. But anyway, thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you soon.